I know this is a tough crowd right after the coffee break at the end of a long conference on Friday afternoon, but I'll do my best to keep you entertained with the topic of the high-energy neutrino cross-section. And high energy is different to everybody. 50 MeV might be high for you, but I'm going to talk about energies between the TeV range, where predictions are starting to overcome, predictions from astrophysical sources are starting to overcome the atmospheric neutrino flux. So from the TeV range on up, where at the highest energies, it's these top-down models that we've heard alluded to earlier, and GZK neutrinos are among the possible sources at high energies. And then, of course, there are different detection techniques for the range of energies. And so I'll discuss the neutrino nucleon cross-section in the range of the TeV on up. And so I'll start with the ultra-high energy neutrino cross-section in the standard model. And in the standard model, there are issues of your standard QCD evolution in Q, in the momentum transfer. And then there are also small parton X issues. And we're particularly interested when Q is of order the W mass. And then I'll have a short discussion on other contributions to the cross-section, standard model, non-perturbative, instanton corrections to the cross-section, a little bit on non-standard model cross-section, and then some short discussion on implications related to attenuation and interaction rates. Okay, this would be a good slide if I'd remembered the factor of two when in the definition of X, but just reminding you that the ultra-high energy neutrino cross-sections depend, especially in the deep and elastic regime, on the parton distribution functions depending on X and Q. And here is the differential cross-section for charge current scattering in terms of parton X and the inelasticity parameter Y that relates Y is equal to the difference between the incoming and outgoing lepton energy normalized by the incident neutrino energy. And you can see the usual energy behavior of the low energy deep and elastic cross section. It scales with energy. But as you go to higher energy, then you're probing different values of Q squared, and so you have an effect of the propagator. And, you know, we're talking very high energies, so Q squared can get pretty big. We're getting the effect of the propagator, where as Q increases, the propagator decreases. And then also the effect of the evolution of the parton distribution functions in Q, where as Q increases, the parton distribution functions increase as well. And so this increase is logarithmic. Of course, the propagator gives you a power law, and the propagator wins. And ultimately, the growth in Q squared cuts off at approximately MW squared. And so as a way to estimate what values of parton X that you're probing, you can take y equal to a half, say, put in your value for S, 2 times MNE, and put in Q squared equals MW squared, and the only kind of math I can do up here is to make MW squared equal to 10 to the fourth. And so you can see that, for instance, at energies of 10 to the 10, your average value of X is, about 10 to the minus 6. And so when you go to 10 to the 12th GeV energies, you're looking down at values of X 10 to the minus 8th and smaller. And so among the issues in the measurement are that the energies of the incident particles, we don't measure neutrino cross-sections to very high energies on this scale. We have neutrino beams up to, say, 350 GeV, and there's an equivalent process, EP, for instance, charge current and neutral current scattering, and the equivalent fixed target energy would be then about 54 TeV. And so the values of X and Q relevant for the ultra-high energy regime are just not measured. And so I'll show you here is the cross-section measurements shown from the particle data group, where it's the cross-section divided by E. You see that nice linear behavior. And then we have also, I have, for instance, charge current from the Zeus collaboration and neutral current from the H1 collaboration. I've put little arrows at x equals 10 to the minus 2. And so these are essentially dx dq squared, d sigma dx dq squared at fixed values of q squared as a function of x for different q squared bins. And so, for instance, here's q squared equals 5300 GeV squared, q squared equals 9500 GeV squared. That's the kind of q squared that we're interested in for the high energy cross sections, but those values of the differential cross section are not measured much below about 0.1 or a little bit smaller. And the same thing here in the case of the neutral currents. And so we're left to do some extrapolations. Of course, there are measurements at Hera that go down to much smaller values of x in the electromagnetic scattering, and those very small values of x down to almost 10 to the minus 6 are at values of q squareds that are actually quite low. In terms of theoretical issues, I've drawn the traditional schematic plot, and I should say I've followed the theorist's rule, and the rule is that you must not put any numbers on the axes here. So maybe that's a sign of sort of the where things are, that when we get a figure like this where we have some borders with numbers, that'll be a good thing. But anyway, we know that as we increase q squared, as long as q squared's not in the non-perturbative regime, that we use standard Dglap evolution of the parton distribution functions. On the other hand, at small values of x, at moderate values of q squared, then we should be concerned about log 1 over x that multiplies powers of alpha, and we should do a resummation of log 1 over x, and that's done in this BFKL formalism. There's a transition regime, and wouldn't you know it, that's where we are in these ultra-high energy neutrino cross-sections, where presumably you need a combination of the standard evolution along with small x resummation, and to do just one or the other is not likely to be exactly the right thing to do. When you get to very small x, so large log 1 over x, then you get to a situation where Luon recombination is important, and that's called saturation. And so those are some of the theory issues. And so I'll start with the standard Dglap evolution of the parton distribution functions. And so at ultra-high energies, we know that the valence distributions are dominating at large x, but at ultra-high energies, we're probing the small x region, and so it's the C, that is SEA quark distributions, that are most important, and the C quarks come from gluon splitting to QQ bar. So most of the discussion then is about the gluon distribution, because the C quarks essentially track the gluon distribution. So I'll just talk about the gluon distribution. And a standard parameterization of the gluon distribution at small x, and then of course the C quarks as well, is at a particular scale to parameterize x times the gluon distribution function in terms of a power law, traditionally called lambda. And for standard distributions, that lambda is, for fits, you know, global fits, is between about 0.3 and 0.35 or so. And if you look at the Dglap evolution in the small x limit, when lambda is not too small, and not too small means larger than about 0.2, in fact, you can show that if this is the parameterization at Q0, that it has roughly the same form than at larger values of Q. On the other hand, if lambda is close to zero or lower than 0.2, then the double leading log approximation is the correct extrapolation at small x, and that has this form here in terms of an exponential, the square root of a log q squared, and also a log 1 over x. And so extrapolations are done traditionally in the power law and or, well, or the double leading log approximation. And I'm showing here a little historical note, the dashed line, which only goes up to 10 to the 10 because we didn't even think about 10 to the 12, I guess, in 1984, shows the old Eichten et al. Part-time distribution functions extrapolated with the double log approximation. And you can see that we've learned something since 1984. Well, I hope so. And then with the dotted line, it's the CTEC 3 distributions from 1995. So now with information from HERA about the small x part-time distribution functions, it's just showing you the difference then between the power law extrapolation with the solid line, the double logarithmic approximation with the dotted line, and then also shown is a distribution function that scales like a power of x to the minus 0.5, which I'll have more to say about in a minute. And there are numerous calculations over the years. And then also to show you how our knowledge of part-time distribution functions has evolved, I show the CTEC 3, CTEC 4, and CTEC 6 distributions, which vary some at the highest energy, but are all very consistent over a long range. Okay, more on small x extrapolations. For the BFKL approach, one sums the logarithms of 1 over x, and so the leading logarithmic summation was done. And in fact, you can do that and predict lambda. And when that was done, the lambda value predicted for the leading log in the case of fixed alpha strong, so no running of alpha, gave a value of about 0.48. So, you know, this is great, and that's partly why the original D minus distribution was discussed. But the problem was that when one went to next the leading log, when one, namely people like these people, went to next the leading log, they found a very large correction. It came with the opposite sign and actually changed the sign of lambda. And so that is not a good sign when your subleading corrections are making dramatic changes. And there's been a lot of work on the subject of resummations in terms of logs of 1 over x. And this is particularly focused towards looking at the low q squared, very low x part-time distribution functions and measurements. And there's been some recent work by Altarelli et al. And Cefaloni et al. Looking at resummation, using running coupling constants. And what I focused on here is just other people's applications then to the neutrino cross-section itself, including these log 1 over x effects. And Kraczynski, Martin, and Stasto published a result that was a unified BFKL DGLAP approach where you need the DGLAP to get the correct log q squared evolution because you're at a nice hefty q squared around mw squared, but since you're in such small values of x, you need the log 1 over x corrections where they've included a running coupling constant. And actually, it comes out very close to what you would have guessed naively using the CTEC 6. I believe they used the GRV 98 part-time distribution functions there. Okay. On to saturation effects. Saturation is due to high gluon densities at small x, where the idea is that if you have a lot of gluons at small x, then the probability for gluon-gluon recombination to make a single gluon is non-trivial, and you need to take into account that scale. Now, I don't know why I ended up with little boxes. The boxes are tildes here. And there's an estimate of the scale at which this recombination should occur, and that scale, which is called the saturation scale, is approximately 1 GeV squared times x to the minus 0.3, where x is scaled by 10 to the minus 4. And if you put in q equals mw, you find then that the saturation scale should be important at 10 to the minus 17 for the value of x, which is clearly not relevant. And so with this first guess, you can look at contours of constant cross-section. Here, this is for an incident neutrino energy of 10 to the 12th GeV, and you can see the saturation region using that approximate formula there, and then the little bits of contours that are in contours in units of 10 to the 0.05, you know, in descending order here. And so this little region of phase space is a very small contribution to the cross-section. And so your first guess from this little geometrical argument is that saturation should not be important. However, there have been further evaluations of saturation. In particular, I show here with the dotted line the Kutek and Kuczynski result, where they use the unified BFKL DGLAP approach. The solid line is what I showed you before. And the dotted line then includes screening. They're using a approach that involves these KT factorized parton distribution functions. And so they're generalized parton distribution functions. And as a result, they probe, basically they probe Q squareds lower than through the range up to Q squared. They probe the parton distribution functions for ranges that go from a lower scale up to a higher scale of the Q squared of the scattering process. And as a result, the screening effect is larger than your naive, than one's naive estimate. Also shown on here are is also Kutek and Kuczynski's use of the GBW color dipole model as an alternative for the BFKL approach at low Q, which, however, does not include Q squared evolution in it. So this would be a estimate of the maximum of the effect of screening. And so there have been a number of other approaches here, all sort of in a similar vein. Another approach using soft non-perturbative model and approximate QCD evolution. This is unfortunately for this presentation, the inverse of the cross-section rather than the cross-section itself. But again, it's approximately this factor of two between the, this in this case, it's the, I believe, the CTEC 6 or CTEC 5 extrapolation using the power law, and then here is using this non-perturbative model with two different choices of parameters entering into their expression. Also, a recent work using color dipole with BFKL and DGLAP, and there was also a poster earlier in the week by Henley and Huang using a color dipole approach that included Q-squared dependence. There's been suggestions also about enhancements in the cross-sections due to high gluon density effects, but I'm awaiting, in particular, this author suggests that there could be a significant enhancement in the cross-section, but I think we need more quantitative discussion of that here. Okay. In terms of standard model but non-perturbative contributions, there have been some calculations of electroweak instanton effects, contributions to the neutrino nucleon cross section, and those have been, I would say, spearheaded by Ringwald and collaborators. Hooper and Hahn have also done an analysis using some work by Bezrukov and collaborators. On precisely what exponential factor needs to appear here. And these are standard model effects, but the effects are not well established, partly as you can see by these two different predictions for the cross-section. I don't think either one is one that somebody would be willing to bet a lot of money on. This dotted line is the standard model cross-section, and then these are two different, the Ringwald, Fodor et al. Cross-section is the lower one that has a earlier onset, and then the Hooper and Hahn using the Bezrukov and Bugayev result is there. And I show this partly to show you sort of what's out there in the literature and to comment that there is some discussion about whether neutrinos could be responsible for the highest energy cosmic rays. It would certainly be interesting if we had millibar, 100 millibar, 1,000 millibar cross sections for neutrinos. On the other hand, these contributions may actually be unobservable. And so there's quite a range of predictions there. Okay, non-standard model physics, extra dimensions, mini black holes. Anybody here ready for that? That's the blue line here. Here's the Fodor et al. Line. And then with and without screening, the QCD evolution here, the BFKL DGLAP unified. With this is a particular black hole, mini black hole prediction for the cross section. The idea is that with these TeV scale modifications of gravity, that in fact neutrino interactions with nucleon can produce mini black holes that then decay and look like showers. And it depends on the scale of extra dimensions and the number of extra dimensions. And this has been a very active topic over the last few years. Now, I should say that, the next plot is talking about uncertainties. Of course, the first uncertainty you have to accept is whether the model of extra dimensions is even something we should be talking about. But given the model, given the number of extra dimensions, given a scale at which the new scale of gravity here, 1 TeV and 0.72 TeV, it's been pointed out that actually, there are a lot of uncertainties even in just the evaluation of the cross section itself. And An, Cavaglia, and Olinto have pointed out that with a few not unreasonable uncertainties put in there for instance, just the prefactor in the geometrical cross section, that you don't have a huge amount of certainty as to what scale one would be measuring if one actually saw events from mini black hole production. In terms of standard model uncertainties, Kusenko and Weiler have fairly recently reminded us all what we have been putting together over the years, and that is that even if there's uncertainty in the cross section, you can get in principle some handle on the cross section by comparing, for instance, horizontal air showers where the cross section scales linearly, where the event rate scales linearly with the cross section. This is at a fixed incident neutrino energy. And with in this case, they're showing tau neutrino upward air showers, as in the picture, for instance, for the USO case, where you have the tau neutrinos skimming the Earth, interacting in the Earth, making a tau, which then emerges and showers. Now, we saw that with USO and with the kind of flux predictions that we have available to us at this moment, it's very hard to actually measure those. But in principle, with a matter of looking at angular distributions, comparing basically downward rates with upward rates as a function of angle, that we should get a handle on the cross section, even if we have some uncertainties here, or some of those cross sections that I showed earlier. Okay, so for standard model physics, we're probing X in regions as yet unseen, and so I'm hopeful that we'll learn more about small x from ultra-high energy neutrino interaction rates, although in the end it's a combination of cross-section and fluxes that we have to measure. And if the instanton contribution is big, then we'll know it. If it's not big, then we won't know it. In terms of enhanced neutrino cross-section, there's a possibility for the discovery of new physics, and after all, the beams are free, even if we don't know them very well. And there's the possibility to explain post-GZK cosmic ray events. But in any case, we look forward to ultra-high energy neutrino results from astrophysical and cosmic sources. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We have time for several questions over there.
Could you please show this picture with instanton cross sections?
With which?
Instanton cross sections.
Yeah.
Induced cross sections for neutrino. It seems that first I want to comment about this further result that it's actually the calculation of Bezrukhov at this group. It just shows that instanton-induced cross-section is suppressed.
Well,
and this result is contradictory to this calculation.
That
yes?
The instanton. So Hooper and Hahn used the Bezrukhov et al.
Yes.
Exponential factor, but I guess they put in their own prefactor, and then there's a question about what. Are you commenting that the prefactor, in fact, is not known?
The other comment, if you look on the how cross section changes through the energy range,
yes.
In this energy range, experiments like, say, Agassa or Age see all the events, yes? Mm-hmm. So if one claims that the highest energy cosmic rays induced by these interactions,
right.
Then at lower energies, one should see significant reduction of the flux or change the flux.
Right.
So which is not seen so far.
You're saying that you'll know already here if you have that cross section. Yes.
Okay. Are there other comments or questions?
If the cross-section rises so quickly, as you show here, what happens to unitarity?
Well, I think it rises, but it doesn't keep rising forever. And I think that it's, you know, that's unitarity is always this asymptotic thing.
More questions, comments? Okay, if not, why don't we thank the speaker again?